Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdio Kabaza, and for today, you know, we're talking about something that's, you know, a bit different and something that I'm quite excited to learn about, because online investing portal Wealth Migrate has actually received a license from the financial, you know, services provider coming into that actually gives them intermediary services on crowdfunding shares. Now, crowdfunding is when a group of people club together to fund a project or a venture. We are going to be joined by Scott Pickin, who is the founder and CEO of Wealth Migrate. This is not the first time that you know, we've had him. We spoke to him back in November about investing in property internationally using technology. But for today, we are looking at investing, you know, from a crowdfunding point of view. So, Scott, once again, greetings to you.
Dua, thanks very much for having us online, and wonderful to be able to share with your community about the developments that are happening, not only locally, but around the world.
But before we actually get into the, you know, the actual developments, just a reminder for, you know, our listeners out there just around Wealth Migrate, what is it that you guys actually do? What's the scope of the operation? Where are you guys based and where are you guys operating at the moment?
Look, in simple terms, what we do is we help people invest in good quality assets with good quality partners around the world. So we cut out the middlemen, we cut the costs, and we dramatically increase the trust, the transparency, and the accessibility. So if you want to invest in England, America, Europe, Australia, South Africa, and you want to do it all easily and safely in one place and be able to manage everything, be it compliance, regulation, banking, all in one place, then we give you access to good quality partners and good quality institutional quality assets, but from a very small amount of money. So our minimum investment is actually $1,000, and we've got a starter pack from $100. But you must understand that we've got everything from investors from pretty much entry-level investors that are wanting to get started right through to institutional investors that are investing millions of dollars. And the beauty for me with technology is that it allows everyone to get access to quality assets that previously we didn't have access to.
Now, as I said at the start of the show, the last time that you were with us, the conversation was around using technology to invest in property internationally. So with this new license, how does that then change, or I guess expand, the offering that you guys are offering to the investor community out there?
But Dua, the most important thing that it brings is trust. So when it comes to the financial space, people like to work with companies that have the regulation and the licenses in place. And so for us, we've been on a long journey trying to get regulated. And the reason we've been trying to get regulated is to solve this very one word, which is trust. You know, people just have a sense of well-being when one is regulated. So what does it do for the investor? It doesn't actually change anything for the investor. They've still got access to the technology. They've still got access to the partners. They've still got access to the opportunities. However, what it has done now is that within the South African context, it has been recognized as a financial instrument, and it has been regulated by the Financial Service Conduct Authority, which is the FSCA. And that's a major step in the right direction, not only for investors, so that they can invest, you know, using this methodology of investing, but also for the country as a whole, because it's really a move towards where technology is going and to where the whole fintech, the financial technology and really financial sector is moving.
I think an important one, because it's always interesting. Most of the time we are talking about, you know, I guess less regulation. You know, especially in the technology space, people want less regulation. We see some of the battles that the likes of Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Apple are fighting with lawmakers in the US, you know, trying to, you know, stave off whatever regulation that those lawmakers want to do. So it's always interesting to hear that companies, that there are some companies that are actively lobbying. But I guess, like you said, it does help to increase the trust, because people will be like, okay, cool, okay, we can trust what Wealth Migrate is offering, because there's regulation behind them. People have vetted them on our behalf. So I guess the important part then is the actual concept of crowdfunding, right? What does that actually entail? Like, are there really people out there that are clubbing together to buy shares, you know, in companies or in stocks and bonds, whatever it is? How are they actually doing it?
Madiba, I think one of the things that's really important here is that there's two ways to answer that. The first thing is that this is not a new concept. You know, in South Africa and in Africa, we've got a concept called Stockfels. In China, there's a concept called Beware. In India, there's a concept very similar. Often it's actually driven by ladies, by females, because it's more of a feminine energy for people to come together and actually invest together. But I mean, this has been going on for centuries, where communities come together, they put their money together, and rather than having, you know, the buying power of one individual, you've got the buying power of a group of people. So it's, and ultimately it allows you to become an institutional investor. Let's be frank, it's not too dissimilar to what Old Mutual's been doing for 60 or 70 years, which is, you know, or Liberty Life or any of the others, where they're bringing people's money together, they're collaborating it, and then they're investing with one check. It's exactly the same thing. All technology is doing is that it's dramatically cutting out the middlemen, dramatically cutting the costs and increasing the trust, the transparency and accessibility. Now, when you say, is that's the overall concept. When you say, has this been happening? Well, for the last 10 years, it's been a massive movement around the world. You know, in England at the moment, there are two companies, one called Cedars, one called Crowdcube. They're joining together at the moment. They're actually merging, and they will be bigger. They will have more companies on their stock exchange, if you want to call it that, okay, but through a crowdfunding platform, than the London Stock Exchange itself. So in England, you've got the London Stock Exchange, and then you've got AIM, which is the junior stock exchange. They will be the second biggest marketplace in England immediately upon them joining together. So, you know, the second thing in using property, for example, in America, there's numerous platforms over there, Realty Mogul, Fundrise, CrowdStreet. None of them allow anyone outside of America to invest. However, a company like CrowdStreet recently raised $20 million in less than 24 hours from the crowd. Now, just by the way, we're very proud to say that our investors also invested in that deal, because we partnered with them and one of their partners on the ground, which allowed international investors to be able to partner. During COVID, they did over $200 million, averaging over $100 million a month. So to come back to your question, Madiwe, this is happening at scale around the world. And what's really exciting, both for South Africa and for the African continent, is that finally with regulation coming into place, it'll allow us and other players, by the way, to really be able to come into the market and have a meaningful impact and provide investors with I believe, far better solutions.
I guess with all of that in mind, because like what you said, the actual concept itself is nothing new, because essentially when you think about, you know, pension funds or, you know, asset managers and stuff like that, they essentially have institutional investors essentially have whatever power they have in the market simply because they have been able to bring so many people's money under one roof. So I guess the big question for a lot of retail investors is, why should I, you know, band together with my mates as opposed to, you know, giving my money over to an asset manager? Yes, the technology is reducing the middlemen, etc. But, you know, would I guess it's one of those philosophical things of, you know, does one rather pay over, you know, I guess fees for an asset manager versus potentially losing, you know, all of their money on their own by making a somewhat dumb investing decision as a group of mates?
It's interesting, Madiba. I'd answer that in three different ways. The first way I'd answer it is that if you still catch a yellow taxi versus an Uber, then this is probably not for you. If during COVID you had a house and you were renting it out on Airbnb, the way to describe it is that we're a transactional marketplace. So we only make money when you, the investor, makes money. The way that the traditional financial industry works is that they do assets under management. So that, to put that in an Airbnb context, is that during COVID, no one was using Airbnb, and Airbnb was making no money, and they weren't charging me any commission or fees to have my house on their website. But if I was an investor, I've paid assets under management right through COVID. So it's like paying Airbnb a fee the entire way through COVID, even though they're making me no money. So that's a really important concept. Okay. And the third thing, which I think is very, very important, is that now using technology, the number one thing that's happening around the world is people want to feel empowered. They want to actually, they don't want to just give their money to someone else and it just be put in some box. They want to create a personal portfolio, something that's meaningful to them. And the nice thing is you don't have to put all your eggs in one basket. You don't have to, you know, bet, you know, on gamble even on one investment. You can diversify. You can diversify across assets. You can diversify across countries. You can diversify across currencies. You can even diversify across partners. And one of the wealthiest men in the world is a guy called Ray Dalio. And his book is called Principles. I highly, highly recommend you go and read it. Now, he's been teaching the wealthiest people in the world to do this for 40 years. And I believe the greatest thing that's exciting now is that you and I and all your listeners have the same opportunity to implement the same strategies just with far smaller amounts of money. And I can tell you one thing, you can pay away your money to someone else and you can give up all that responsibility, and you are going to pay a lot of fees. Think Uber and Airbnb as a metaphor. Or you can take control of your financial life. You can start learning. You can understand that you will make mistakes. It's really important. None of us learned to walk the very first time we stood up. You will make mistakes. But I can tell you, it's a hell of a lot better to be walking today than crawling around on your hands and knees and relying on someone else.
I like that. I like that that walking analogy. And I guess given the fact that you take such a global stance, despite, you know, being based here in South Africa, how do you anticipate people to actually then use the service? Because does it also then give them access to international investments, or are they sort of, I guess, restricted to local ones?
So look, if you go to the website wealthmigrate.com, you sign up in a compliant way, you will have access to South African opportunities. You will have access to American opportunities. You will have access to English opportunities. I'm very excited to say you're about to have access to European opportunities. We're about to launch a deal with John Robbie. If anyone knows Century City in Cape Town, you know, one of the most successful developers in South Africa over the last 40 something years, we're actually allowing and partnered with him to allow our investors to partner in his next opportunity in Portugal, where you can get access to European investments. So I think what I'm trying to get at, Madiwe, is that I don't think where you geographically live anymore has any relevance on where you invest. You need to be a global citizen. Obviously in South Africa, we've got exchange control. So you need to move the money legally, and our team can help you with that entire process. You fund your wallet. We've got European wallets. So your money is protected by European law, as well as the top five banks in Europe. Effectively, it's a digital wallet. You put your money in the digital wallet. It's your wallet. You're completely in control of it. And then you have the ability to invest wherever you want in the world, not only to invest, but also to get all your returns into your digital wallet. So I like to think of it like, if you want to live in South Africa, fantastic to you. I live here by choice. I'm not forced to live in South Africa. I love living in South Africa. I'm a passionate South African. But I think that every single one of us needs to endeavor to be a global citizen, which means that our wealth is invested around the world. Where we choose to live is a separate conversation.
I completely agree with you, because I guess some of the most exciting opportunities for investment aren't necessarily in South Africa, but at the same time, it's always good to have some type of local exposure.
So I don't want to cut you off. I'm not saying that you shouldn't invest in South Africa. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you shouldn't invest all your money in one country, in the same way you shouldn't have invested all your money in America before 2007, and then the American property market lost anywhere from 40 to 70%. You shouldn't have all your assets in one country. It's just not logical. Like, the wealthiest people don't do that. So, you know, there are good opportunities in South Africa, and we want to highlight the best partners and the best opportunities, and people can participate in those opportunities, but they no longer have to feel like they're geographically stuck in any one country. They can get access to the best opportunities. I'll give you another example. We've been helping people invest in medical buildings in America for more than nearly 10 years now. Fantastic opportunities we've done, our investors have done really well by it. One of the things we're concerned about, and I myself am quite heavily exposed in US dollars, is that the dollar is expected to devalue by 50% against the euro over the next 5 years. And so as an investor that's primarily focused on England and America, I need to look at that and I think, well, I need to have more exposure in Europe. I need to have more investments in Europe. And so what's beautiful now as an investor is that I don't have to go and sell my other assets or whatever. I just start accumulating assets in different countries, different geographies with different partners, and I can continue to grow that asset base around the world.
Okay, cool. No, completely understood. Completely understood. I guess for me, it was just acknowledging that there needs to be that balance, right, where you can't put all your eggs into, you know, the one proverbial basket, you know, simply because, I guess, hedging your risk. I guess that's one of the big things that that Ray Dalio does talk about in principles, right, that you need to have, you know, a balanced portfolio across different asset classes and across different different geographies. So I guess taking things forward, when it comes to, I guess, you know, exciting opportunities that, you know, you're seeing in the market, or I guess maybe trends, I think that's just a better way of putting it, South Africa versus what you're seeing around the world. How are people, I guess, in other parts of the world using technology when it comes to investing that you think South Africans hadn't been able to take advantage of so far?
So look, in terms of trends that are happening around the world, I think if we look at it just at a very simple level, what has happened during the COVID last 12 months is that it's accelerated people's ability to do stuff online. You know, Madiwa, yourself and I and Paige were talking about this earlier, where a year ago you would have expected me to fly up to Johannesburg. We'd be sitting in a studio in Johannesburg to have this interview. And now we're at three different places and three different locations using Zoom. All of us have learned in the last year to live and work remotely. Secondly, many people didn't know how to buy online, like go to e-commerce and actually buy stuff. And around the world, we've seen shares of e-commerce companies go through the roof because people have had to learn how to do that online. Another one is education. So in the education space, we've seen a huge adoption of online learning over the last year. And there's a company I work with that has literally seen its valuation more than 10x over the last 12 months. What's interesting is that the investment space has been a slower adopter. And particularly in South Africa, we're very akin to being face-to-face. We want to meet the person that we're going to invest with from a face-to-face perspective. If we want to invest in a property, we often want to go and see the property kind of face-to-face, touch it, kick it, make sure it exists. And because what's happened in the last year is that people are becoming more and more au fait with actually doing stuff online, having important meetings online, actually being able to get the information, the knowledge and the facts. The last thing that I think is important is that, you know, England brought in some of the most progressive regulation around the fintech space, fintech being crowdfunding, online banking, et cetera, and they have peer-to-peer lending, et cetera. And they've been one of the market leaders. They've had a massive impact on the economy, on creating jobs, on being able to start SMEs, which are small and medium enterprise ventures, which is basically empowering entrepreneurs, on being able to do property investment, et cetera. They've had a massive, massive impact. In America, they've had the Jobs Act, and that came out in 2013. So some of these countries, for the best part of the last decade, have been ramping up. And that's why I've already told you, both of those countries have examples where they are now having a really meaningful impact on the economy at large. In South Africa, what's truly exciting with these new developments, with the regulator opening up the space, is that I believe over the next 10 years, investors and partners, so whether they're a small to medium enterprise company that's looking for funding, whether they're a property partner like a John Raby or someone, doesn't matter how sophisticated or experienced they are, that wants to come into the digital world, is going to have access to these opportunities. And I think the next 10 years is extremely exciting, not only for South Africa, but for the African continent, as we finally now have followed some of those other countries in the adoption of the regulation.
Now, as we end off, because, you know, some of the trends that you are talking about, because we do, one of the things that technology has done is, I guess, break down the barriers even more, you know, the transport revolution and all of that helps to break down geographic barriers, and the internet has helped to break down all of those barriers even more. We're in three different places, like you said, but I feel like when it comes to the pandemic and investing, a discussion around, you know, such a topic is not complete without at least getting your thoughts around the cryptocurrency space. Wealth Migrate, are you guys in there? Are you looking to get in that space? Or are you going to stick to, you know, what you guys know at the moment?
So look, I think, Madiwa, it's a good question. The rise of cryptocurrency and, more important, blockchain, and it's an entire other interview if you want to get into blockchain. I personally believe that blockchain, and many others believe that blockchain, is going to have a bigger impact on the world than the internet has, because ultimately it solves trust. So what you've got is you've got e-commerce and you've got social media coming together, and what they've formed is social commerce, which is where you and I are commercially interacting with each other. Blockchain provides the foundation of trust. So what we've basically seen is that with cryptocurrencies, and even more recently NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens, there's massive developments happening around the world. A picture just sold on Christie's for 50 million pounds. A digital property, literally an avatar of a property, sold in America for $500,000. So is this space happening? Yes, but it's at a very, very early stage. I believe personally that we will be buying and selling property on the blockchain through things called NFTs. However, how quickly that market adoption is going to take is hard to tell. And why I say that is because, again, it will be based on the regulators allowing it to take place, and secondly, allowing the exchanges to create, it's called a security exchange, to allow security exchanges to take place. The whole market is moving very fast in that direction. But there's also a lot of, you know, in America, in the wild, wild west, when you went out to kind of, when as they went on the land rush, there were very few rules. And in that case, a lot of people got hurt as well, if that makes sense. And so it's a hard combination between, you know, being the first. They often say that the first, you know, person out there, there's a very there's a fine line between the cutting edge and the bleeding edge. And I just think what's really, really important to say with that is, do we believe in cryptocurrency? 100%. Have we looked at launching our own cryptocurrency? We did launch a utility token called the Wealthy Coin back in 2018. We will launch a security token at some point in the future when the regulators is ready. There's no doubt the world is going in that way. However, you can't live too much in the future. The present market is used to dealing in, you know, normal assets using fiat currency, and we ultimately help people solve their problems today with an eye on where the future is going.
Now, it's really good to see that you guys have, you know, been thinking about this and are looking at ways of implementing it in your own company. But I feel like, you know, we sort of glossed over it for a few minutes, the whole issue of NFTs. But I feel like that, you know, just NFTs on its own could be like a whole hour long discussion. But before we end off, I wanted to, you know, because NFTs are so new, and I've actually spent a bit of time going down some interesting rabbit holes. You know, I want to bounce off, you know, on you, because I haven't had an opportunity to actually see whether I'm understanding what NFTs are. So I'm going to give you my rudimentary understanding of NFTs, and maybe you can tell me if I'm understanding it correctly. So the way that I get it is that an NFT, non-fungible token, fungible, you know, speaking to the quality of interchangeability from one, you know, form to another, especially within currencies. So can it be changed or not? Or can it be swapped, on that end? So you create a token of a digital representation of a good. So if, for example, I don't know, Kim Kardashian decided that she was going to, you know, using the physical world as an example, if Kim Kardashian decided that she was going to print out her first Instagram post and then sign, you know, or put an autograph on it, that immediately becomes a valuable piece of quote-unquote art. And that's what these tokens are, where you create a digital representation of an instance of a digital item, and you authenticate to say, this is this is me as the owner, this is the one that I say, you know, I have put my autograph on, because digital goods can be replicated. But this is, you know, this token represents the fact that this is the one that I went and I quote unquote printed and put my signature on. Am I getting that part correctly?
100%. I'll give you another metaphor. Most of us that are listening to this call have bought and sold a house. What is a token? It's effectively a deed. You know, when you own a house, you have a deed, and the deed goes to the deeds office. A token is basically a digital deed, and the deeds office is the blockchain. You're effectively putting the deed on the blockchain. Now, what a non-fungible token means is that it can't be replicated. Like, if I own my house, no one else can own my house. That's the whole purpose of why we've had a deeds office for 100 plus years. And so it's exactly the same thing, whether it's Kim Kardashian's first Instagram post, that, as you say, that she signed, or whether it's your house, it's the same thing. It's an asset, and there's a deed to the asset, and then the deed is stored on a safe and secure deeds office, which just happens to be the online blockchain.
All right, cool. So that's been it. As I said, we could talk about this, you know, for many hours. Very fascinating discussion. That was us with Scott Picken, who is the founder and CEO of Wealth Migrate. They are a digital marketplace for investors that has traditionally been dealing in real estate, but now they've been given a license that allows for people to do crowdfunding when it comes to, you know, buying and selling of shares. And he was just talking about the fact that this is, you know, it's nothing new, but they just wanted to be able to have that regulation, have that license, so that they can be, you know, rubber stamped by the authorities and increase trust in their investor base. Also, just talking about the trends around the world, where are things going, what type of developments are we seeing, investing in South Africa versus other parts of the world, getting that balance right, and ending off just with the discussion around the blockchain and some of those you know, cryptocurrencies and the technologies enabled on that front. So that's been it. Scott, thank you so much for being with us.
Adewa, thanks very much. As you can probably hear, I'm very passionate about the space. I will leave one closing comment for everyone, and it's two ideas. The one idea is that don't think technology is a fix-all. Make sure that you take your personal responsibility and do your own investment and your research. Technology, the fundamentals of investing don't change. And I want to be very clear on that. And secondly, hopefully everything that you've heard today, I think we've all got a responsibility to share the message that there is a new way, that people can get access to good quality opportunities, that they can invest literally like the wealthiest people in the world. And I think that that is absolutely amazing, because not only can people get empowered, but each and every one of us can aspire to be a global citizen and take control of our financial lives. And I'd like to, you know, welcome everyone. I think the next financial decade is going to be incredibly exciting, where people can take control and we can solve one of the greatest challenges on the planet.
Each one of us can be a global citizen and take control of our financial lives. Those are the words of Scott Picken, founder and CEO of Wealth Migrate.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Fascinating discussion with Scott from Wealth Migrate. And I think two of the biggest takeaways is, you know, that fact of what technology has done, the shift that it's bringing to our way of life. Not to say that a lot of these things weren't already there, but it's just helped us to accelerate some of these things. And one of that is the power that retail investors actually have. We've actually seen a couple of platforms coming up, including Wealth Migrate, that are trying to promote this idea of giving local investors exposure to what's going on in South Africa, exposure to what's going on outside of South Africa in terms of the market. And some of these innovative concepts, like this crowdfunding thing, like what Scott was saying, you know, nothing new, and perhaps the fact that more power is being given to retail investors might mean that one day the future, I don't know, own mutual, you know, who knows what people can actually do when they do band together. Maybe a team of 10 guys, you know, come together, they do a lot of reading and are able to build up a sizable portfolio. And I think it does mark that shift of, do you have large institutional investors, the likes of the old mutuals, the Sanlams, etc., or do you start seeing more pockets of smaller, you know, smaller funds that are run by, you know, groups of friends or people that, you know each other? That would be an interesting thing to see developing, you know, into the future, what type of power retail investors actually have. Could they band together to have that institutional type of power? Are we going to see a more democratized space when it comes to investment? And, you know, I guess the last part just around blockchain and the type of opportunities that it has, you know, that point that Scott made about selling and by buying and selling real estate using the blockchain and possibly smart contracts that can help you to authenticate, you know, ownership deals and stuff like that, I think is going to be quite an interesting application. When it comes to blockchain, we often talk about what's happening with Bitcoin and, you know, the cryptocurrencies, but there's so many different applications. We started talking about NFTs and what's actually going on in that space, but I think that in itself could be a whole discussion just around what's happening in that space. So exciting things happening in the investment space, driven in part by what's going on in technology and the type of power that it is giving to, you know, no normal people, the likes of you and I. What can it actually do? And, you know, also going forward, when it comes to these issues of new platforms, technology, the blockchain, what are the big institutional investors going to be doing? Because we spent a lot of time focusing on how retail investors can take back a little bit more power, but how will the big guys, the more traditional players, actually respond to some of these changes into the market? We wait and see. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.